Some only visible in darkness.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated, Fukushima irradiated, island-chained paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, where the sun shines oh so nicely and everybody enjoys beautiful sunburn from the hole in the ozone layer caused by HAARP and weather modification weapons. And my very special guest joining me today is Robert Potter. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be with you and your audience today.
I'm sure they're very happy to have you. However, personally, as with most of my guests, I'm unfamiliar with your work. So if you would regale me and take as long as you want, you know, you've got a free platform here, about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, my name's Rob Potter. I've been working in the field of extraterrestrial and been having contacts for probably 42 years at least, with the late, great Dr. Fred Bell, traveled the country for many years. I have two radio shows myself, one on the Pyramid One Network in Australia down there. You can hear us live. I think we're on Fridays. I just joined them with the Revolution from my Revolution radio station. I joined Pyramid One Network, and I just finished some interviews with JJ and Desiree Hertak, the author of The Keys of Enoch, as well as with Ralph and Marsha Ring. They'll be airing this week or this month down under. And then in the United States, I also have another show called Victory of the Light. I have a website called The Promise Revealed. The Promise Revealed.com. People might want to go there now if they're listening. And another website I work heavily on is called prepareforchange.net. I, from an early age, knew that lots of things were going to be changing on the planet, and I've been kind of planning and setting my sights on understanding the truth. You know, my whole life I've been a seeker of truth, no matter where it is, what it is, whether it's in government or mostly in spiritual consciousness raising awareness has kind of been my focus. And it led me to an inner journey through studying various philosophies and religions, and then having experiences with a scientist and with the extraterrestrials and the Pleiadians, most notably the female cosmonaut named Semyasi that Billy Meyer had a contact with. When I was very young, I was getting contact notes from Colonel Wendell Stevens. And on my website is documented in many interviews, including my three coast-to-coast interviews, and one of them there, I think the first one, I did talk about my experience with one of the Earth's first military extraterrestrial allies in the resistance movement back in the early 80s. He took me out into the desert and introduced me to a spaceship that came and landed. I was having a lot of out-of-body experiences with Fred Bell and the Pleiadians, and I was seeing them at a distance, but I wasn't really clear. So I was very fortunate to have a extremely close encounter with several witnesses present. I also have spoken around the world in various locations: Egypt, Canada, Europe, United States, around the world, a little bit here and there, on extraterrestrials, our cosmic heritage and spiritual destiny, understanding who we are, where we come from, what is this situation here going on the earth, and in regards to our world governments, extraterrestrials, free energy, HARP chemtrails, vaccinations, GMOs, poisoned food, Agenda 21, and advanced healing technologies as well, especially in the areas of pyramids, crystals, and lasers. I'm an expert in pyramids, understanding their uses, sacred geometry products. If you look over my site, I have lots of different products and stuff that are kind of advanced in terms of metaphysical understanding. We utilize lasers and crystals. The Pleiadians gave us this technology back in the 70s and 80s through Dr. Fred Bell. I was building pyramidal array systems with Tesla coils and lasers, and setting them up in, you know, like rock studios of David Tickle, a famous producer who's produced everyone from Deborah Harry to U2, and you name it, he's been there, done that. And he has some of these pyramid systems in his sound booths that utilized lasers and special design pyramidal arrays to enhance and heal the body through natural pyramid energy. So I've had quite a journey. My work lately has been with Cobra. I also work with my great friend Len Horowitz on who wrote the book AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Action, and Intentional, Reverse Pirates of the DNA Spiral, Healing Celebrations and Healing Codes of the Biological Apocalypse, as well as Death in the Air. The guy can really research. I did a lot of work with him on healing water projects, as well as on the swine flu scare, exposing the fact that, you know, the government, one of the, I want to say GlaxoSmithKline, but someone, guy had the patent for the swine flu, you know, in 2007. So I've been kind of up on, you know, what's been going on, and I've come to an understanding about the cosmic situation, what's going on here in regards to planet Earth, why we're in quarantine, why the ETs can't land, where we come from, what our purpose is, and kind of in a non-religious but yet a spiritual, science meets spiritual way. So that's kind of my history. Where would you like to go, Vinny? We got a huge swath we could cover. I do
What I like to start off with is how you actually kind of got into what you're doing in the first place, you know, upbringing, childhood, who are your influences, and then I'd like to go into what you don't normally talk about, or maybe something you haven't actually said on radio before because, I don't know, you're not 100% sure about it yet, and you haven't wanted to kind of bring it out before you understand it fully yourself, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, I was conceived in Dalkeith on the Swanee River near Perth. I'm half Australian, Potter. My last name, and when I go down to Perth or Australia, it's just fun to open the phone book and just see pages of Potters. Pages of Potters. Anyway, my dad kind of met my mom in New York. Born in San Francisco, been to Perth 5 or 6 times, have a lot of cousins down there. Simon, Keith, Kim, the whole crew down there. I have a ton of family down there, and I love Australia. And grew up in Laguna Beach, California, primarily, a home of Timothy Leary, Rajneeshnees, the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. We had one of the first Hare Krishna temples. It was a surf community. We have the oldest volleyball tournament in the world. Volleyball tournament in the world's been going on down there on the beach tournament anyway. Annual. Lots of surfing. My dad lived in Hawaii, moved to Oahu, spent a lot of years surfing. Was a lifeguard, played water polo, excelled in that area, and then moved on naturally. Through healing, I have ETs and my contacts confirmed for me kind of my life path. I said, you know, what can I do to help? The thing, they said, we have great healing energy, continue in that. So I've been a master kind of therapist. I've been licensed for 37 years, worked in many, many spas in Palm Springs, and had private practice up in Hollywood with the with the kind of Stars thing back in the 80s. And I've always worked with Dr. Fred Bell as his assistant in the lab, kind of as a protege, contactee, sharing experiences in his home in Laguna Beach, where the Pleiadian ships were coming around and he was having physical contacts in the, in the nature area behind his house there, on top of the world. And then having my own experiences, my influences were spiritual. I would have to say Autobiography of Yogi and Carlos Castaneda were some of my earliest experiences. Had a lot of alchemical transmutation experiences in consciousness and kind of understanding who we are and where we came from. So I would have to say, you know, just the general environment of, you know, growing up in the 60s and 70s, kind of in that flourishing time, and traveling with the National Health Federation, I was very much into health and still very much am. If you look at my site, most of my products are health-oriented stuff. So let's see. As far as anything I haven't really talked about, I've talked about a lot of stuff. You know, as far as any the new stuff coming out, I mean, I wouldn't say, for me, I have direct experiences in certain subjects that have come to kind of a fruition and a ripening in my understanding. And one of the things that I've been sharing lately, or the latest information, has to do with the planet's quarantine, if we could call it that. And that is the result of a hostile situation that took place. If we can imagine a very, 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 very large universe with our sector of the galaxy, imagine 450 million star systems, not even number of inhabited planets, but four star systems that would contain life. We can imagine the vastness of creation and the myriad forms of life and consciousness that exists in not only the physical plane, but we live in an open-ended, multidimensional universe. And my radio show, The Victory of the Light, which you can see on my website, The Promise Revealed, I interviewed J.J. Hertag, and he talked about that very subject, how everything just is continuing to expand and grow. And our limited perceptions here are caused for a reason. And what is the situation on Earth that is unique, Vinny? And for me, I found out that the Earth is like a movie. And in fact, they make movies to throw people off the scent. Literally, they're very, very advanced in their counterintelligence and psychological spin operations through media. But the situation has been that in a long time ago, people probably heard of Atlantis and Lemuria, and who knows the exact details of this, you know, situation. But as I'm told to understand that long, long time ago, some beings who had a very controlling lifestyle, maybe even on the planet Venus, ended up not having the support for their lavish, selfish ways. And they came to Earth, and it seemed the souls were attracted here to that type of system. And the result has been that the Earth kind of reached a certain technological level and was probably not the most advanced spiritual civilization, but things were going along pretty smoothly. And what happened was is a group of extraterrestrials, you probably heard of them, the reptilians, the Greys. Now, let's imagine that they have another cousin, and that cousin has manipulated them in violation of a galactic codex. There's a certain technology where on the physical planes, when a soul incarnates into a physical body, it can have its psychological and physiological makeup influenced through a technology that can literally manipulate and control the consciousness, can jam the frequency to the spiritual self to an extent that makes it difficult for the soul to reach a higher state of consciousness or understanding. And so this technology has been outlawed, and it's been used by these beings on other beings. And now guess what the plan is? These other beings go and get other beings to do the dirty work. So you're twice removed. It's kind of like a drug dealer. The top guy isn't even known, and the bottom guys are breaking the rules.
What you're describing here is basically how the Rockefeller family works.
Kind of in the highest level. Who are they? Those are actually fallen extraterrestrial beings who've taken up human bodies. They've exited. They have a technology, Vinny, where they can actually push a soul out of its body and force a soul into that body.
I didn't know they needed technology for that. I thought it was just a ritual demonic possession and massive Satanism and child rape and stuff like that that was capable of doing that.
Yeah, that's a disassociative technique that's used by these reptilians to reinforce this programming. It's generally a trauma-based system that creates alter personalities, at least in the human psychology, that allows those beings to repress it on a certain level here. And here's a big reveal. Everyone on the planet who's born here has to go through, because of this matrix that took place, I should go back to Atlantis and Lemuria, they came into the planet secretly. They had bases underground, and they started picking up leaders, abducting them, literally, even back then. And they would implant them. They had dental chairs, and they put implants into their etheric body, a very high technology, where they started to manipulate and control the leaders to certain political ends. And so the result was, the bottom line, the end of the story, as we all know, was, and the exact details are not important, but about 30,000 years ago, an asteroid was bought in, kind of like as a weapon from a previous, our asteroid belt actually is another planet that was destroyed in the same type of situation.
I heard that it was a water planet, and when it exploded, it sent kind of like ice shrapnel in every direction. It got frozen in space, and then a lot of those water or frozen sort of cometoids came into our atmosphere and caused the Great Flood or something. Have you heard about that?
That was actually, the asteroid was a longer one, but there has been a series of kind of cataclysmic type things. This particular one was an asteroid came down and hit Lemuria. It caused another more like tsunami flood and a drastic altering of the surface, because it cracked the mantle kind of at the top and all the gas chambers collapsed. So huge continents. In fact, Lemuria, 64 million souls were lost in one night. And you're probably living on one of the remnants of the mountaintops there. All of the statues from Easter Island always face the center of the Pacific, and there are various places around the world where these statues exist. But
something to supplement that, they recently excavated those statues in Easter Island, and they found out that there's not just heads, there's actually full statues under the ground there that have been buried under layers and layers of sediment over thousands upon thousands of years.
Yeah, these megalithic sites around the world. I was at the Bosnian pyramids. Actually, was it last year or the year before, maybe? I can't remember. I think it was last year with Dr. Samos Monagich and J.J. Hertak as well. And we studied the megalithic sites there. But they had, of course, the free energy technology of the star families that have been here in the ancient past and being suppressed here now.
Yeah, that's true. I was watching a travel show where this woman went to Egypt, you know, and just like, oh, we're going to travel Egypt, it's going to be nice. And she gets on one of these river boats with the local fishermen and travels down, and she asks them, so how did they build the pyramids? And the guy's just like, matter-of-factly, well, they use wands. They're capable of tapping the stones and then levitating them and then shifting them into place. It was pretty easy. And she's like, okay. Like, just totally doesn't believe it. I was like, okay, yeah, right, bro. That's right. Well, we've got the most advanced technology that has ever been, even though there's been discovery after discovery of way more advanced technology in the ancient world than we have today.
That's true, on a certain extent. We actually have some very advanced technology. It's hidden. If you go to my website, I have the Secret Space Program photo gallery, which I was approached by a one of the government guys that build the secret space program, and he released a lot of pictures through me of the very advanced secret space program, including pictures from ships leaving Area S4, ships docking at the International Space Station. We're not talking shuttles. We're talking
large cruiser craft, I heard. In fact, this is something I've been talking with a couple of guys about just recently over the weekend about the moon landing, and they're like, ah, well, the moon landing, it either happened or it didn't happen. And according to my research, it's kind of like the original moon landing didn't happen. But since then, on the other hand, it's been a completely different story. And there have been a lot of launches from Cape Canaveral that don't get reported. They're kind of like black bag operations or something.
I'll clear a couple of things up. One, they did land on the moon. They landed on Mars in 62, FYI, but they did land. I lived in Laguna Beach. I went to school with Bryn Cannon, Buzz Aldrin's stepdaughter, and he didn't talk about it, but what happened was sworn to secrecy. Yeah, of course. They have it's a contract. They signed a contract that they're going to end their life. They have pension. He's got enough money. He could come clean and be a whistleblower, but he toes the party line there. They have there's certain levels of elitism there. They've seen the history. If they're smart enough, they know what happens to people who talk. You could go down. But they did land on the moon. They did have an alternative program. In fact, it was in Australia, and one of the guys left a Coke bottle in front of it. But when they switched over the station there, they played a recording. A lot of it was recorded because they were had another alternative. They land near some ruins there, and they were doing some other things there, is what I understand and believe.
Well, that's funny, because I was watching a movie called Transformers, the third one of the series called Dark of the Moon. And, of course, the reason why they went to the moon was actually to search and have a look through an old alien spacecraft that had crashed there a long time ago.
Right, and actually the one of the things that start there with the probe, and the last thing it sees is like an alien spacehead on the moon before it gets squished. But what really happened is they did send a probe out there. There's a huge ship came and just snatched it. So they're not allowed to see certain things. The good guys and the bad guys have had an kind of a quarantine truce about what's going on with the Earth. The Earth has been held captive since this invasion. They bought in this thing. It destroyed the planet. The light forces withdrew. The planet was pretty much toast at that time. It was going to be a long time before the continents could come together. Lots of earthquakes took place after that. There was lots of tectonic movement. And all the rest of the world's civilizations, Atlantis and other outposts, began to make preparations to go inside the inner Earth chambers, as well as to send out various emissaries to different parts of the world where, due to the flooding that took place from the tsunami, that a lot of technology, people were just they didn't have their technologies. Like, imagine a flood, we'd lose everything. We go back to caveman pretty quick. So that's what the Bible, when you talk about the Mennonites, the Canaanites, and they did this and all this warring and stuff that was going on, was they'd been kind of reverted after this devastating loss of technology, which came about through no fault, well, some fault, but primarily through manipulation of the human consciousness field through an implantation process, which has still been ongoing. And so this is where we're at now, is the jig is up. The Galactic Federation is, we've reached a point of understanding where they can share with us the truth of what's going on and we can understand it. For those of us who had enough experience in this realm, and the other people, it doesn't even matter, because the truth is going to be revealed. It can't be stopped now. This is an unfolding of life force, energy, and truth that is going to lead to what's called divine intervention, or enforcement of a galactic codex for genetically altering the species, and through violation of of the free will of other beings. There are going to be beings who live thousands of years in one body, and they have already been arrested. In fact, I want to tell you that the secret space program has had its wings clipped. The ETs have removed a lot of the technology that the government had captured from crashes. They have shut down those large numbers of underground bases. Even in Asia, they've been removed from the lower levels. A lot of those bases have already been cleared of negative extraterrestrials. There's a few left in what is called the Chimera group. They spend most of their life underground. They live in projected human bodies, and they control a very advanced scalar network, which suppresses human consciousness and acts as a jamming frequency to the spiritual overself.
Not entirely unlike the film They Live.
Exact. Very close to that. That film is very, in a sense, very, very accurate to certain things that are going on.
Robert, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to have to just take a break right now.
Sure.
And we'll be right back in just a few seconds, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Robert Potter is my guest. His websites are thepromiserevealed.com and prepareforchange.net. If you want this broadcast to keep continuing, just please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and check out our great sponsors, Blue Shield, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, and the High Tea Cafe in New London. And if you don't feel like buying a product or something of that nature, then, well, you can be like most of the other listeners and you can make either a donation to me on a one-off basis, or you can start donating regularly once a month. The PayPal buttons and bank account numbers are there on the homepage of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Robert Potter. And just before the break, we were talking about the movie They Live. And I want to share, you know, like, one of my realizations, Robert, is that human creativity is pretty frickin' limited. And that means whatever you see in films that is done as fantasy, usually what it is, it's actually just some idea that they stole from something that really happened and just changed a few details and manipulated and changed it up a little bit. Just, you know, so it's not kind of recognizable as reality or exactly historically based. And then they come out and they say this is a work of fiction, when the reality is it's actually based on something that really, really happened, which they don't think we're prepared to accept as a full reality as yet. And so what we've got now is an enormous system of predictive programming where people are starting to accept reality by thinking it's not reality. And in so doing, they live an entire life of lies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to have to smoke a doobie after that one. That was pretty convoluted. But I think it goes both ways, Vinny. I think the good guys actually try to get the information out, and they can't get it out by telling us straight up. But they get it out through leaking it to different sources of information, and certain people are kind of in positions where certain information is getting out and reaching the public. For instance, the movies The Matrix and The Avatar were very much sponsored and guided by what we call the resistance movement, or a certain cadre of extraterrestrials who were on the planet living beneath the surface and working with the native Agartha network, which has been down there. You've probably heard of the underground tunnel network of Agarthans, which are good
guys. I haven't, actually.
Okay, well, from the Atlantean times, what there were, Vincent, there were pyramids around the planet that held flames. They were called the Ra's, and these flames could be used to accelerate consciousness and to provide free energy through these pyramid technologies. And they were kind of, there's a spiritual brother-sisterhood of known as the Order of Melchizedek, and they are the ones that teach the secrets and meanings of life and kind of the reason we're here and to kind of guide cultures along. And they took these flames underground. One was called Ra in Egypt, went underground, the Giza complex area near Luxor. And then, of course, they have the Ra-Ma in the Himalayas beneath the Bermuda Triangle, where a series of old cities from Atlantis that went under water called Ra Yolo. And then the Posidid in the Mato Grosso in Brazil, it's a huge underground Agartha network. And, of course, Ramu in Mount Shasta. And then I'm sure there's some in the Pacific. There's one known as the Order of the Star. And these are benevolent, kind of more advanced, fourth-dimensional, higher vibrational societies that exist beneath the surface and still maintain high technology. They basically had nothing, wanted nothing to do with us for 30,000 years. And the fact of the matter is they are now very much dealing with our situation, which is kind of, as I talked about, a hostile takeover bully situation with master psychologists that have been running the system, creating a world debt slavery financial system. And they control the media, they control the military, they control science, they control education, they control the satellites, they control medicine, and they've created a pharmaceutical constant perpetual state of sickness and enrich themselves while higher technologies are suppressed. We've had free energy available to us for probably 100 years almost, and it's been suppressed by the forces that want to keep us in ignorance, superstition, and fear. And here's the deal. This is the new thing I've come up with, Vinny, is understanding these people need healing. It's not about punishment. It's about arrest and removal. And that's what's taking place. You've probably heard about the revaluation of the world's currencies. Everyone's talking about the dinar and they want to get rich. It's an individual ego thing. But reality is we have to come to a transparent, honest, and just financial system. And the part of the process of becoming prepared for first contact and interplanetary cultural exchange requires several things. One, a removal and an acknowledgement of the, you know, not using nuclear power, and of course, a transparent, a just financial system that can can segue into a non-monetary system, a universal economic system based on an ever increasing source of abundance. So these things must take place, and there's great shifts taking place. We live in a holographic universe. There kind of really is no past, present, or future. It's all here now. So from the now, everything is moving forward with ever increasing waves of light, and unveiling of truth is taking place on all levels and segments of our world. And the Galactic Federation and the Agarthan Network, which contains, as I said, the Resistance, who are very active not only in media but in military and monitoring all of the criminals of the world's finances and those who are involved in the satanic rituals, child abuse, pornography, children's trafficking, whatever it is, raping and pillaging of the Earth's natural resources and destroying the environment. We take oil out of the ground in greed. We put it in the air to run our cars, which we don't need to do. And everyone says, isn't there free energy? Well, it's being suppressed, and it's pretty clear it is. So there has to be a plan for the liberation of the planet, and fortunately there is one, and there's been a group of dedicated spiritual missionaries who have been watching our situation, and they conduct it kind of like a military operation in regards to activities with these other beings that have actually surreptitiously invaded our planet and control it from, used to control it from layers deep within the earth in conjunction with secret governments. See, the good guys, Vinny, back in the late 50s, the good guys said, hey, we want to help you guys. Look, we'll help you get over nuclear power. We'll help you with science, education, technology, transportation, communication, spiritual laws of the universe, your true history, where you came from, what's going on. And they said, well, that's fine. But they told me I have to get rid of nuclear power, and the government... leaders were manipulated by the secret families that were already taken over by these guys, controlled all the money in the system, knew about the aliens, didn't want the good guys here, and said, no, 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 that'll ruin our money system and we don't trust you. When in reality, the military guys were told, you know, watch out for these guys. You know, they don't want to give us the technology, but we're going to make a deal with these little gray guys and the reptilians. So they made a deal with them, and they said, we just want to abduct some of your people. So the government made a deal with them, which wasn't worth the paper it was written on. And those guys basically have been implanting the human population for thousands of years, and they have given their technology to certain members of the government and elitist families. Some people call them the breakaway civilization, but they have a completely different mindset, and they think nothing of us. They think of us as cattle or
prey,
useless eaters. They themselves don't realize that they have been used the same way by the reptilians. And the sad thing is, the reptilians have been implanted and used as super soldiers for another group that's remaining aloof from the situation. So that had to be healed. And this was a big part of a giant multidimensional galactic alliance process in trying to heal this rift in the lower plane worlds where this dysfunction and selfishness exists. So there's been a plan, and it's coming to fruition. It's already come to fruition on many worlds, and it's taking place on our world now. And within the higher dimensions, there's actually, and this goes into a spiritual thing, which might not completely resonate with everyone, but there are certain energy rays that are available to our souls, and there's been some new ray energies flooding our solar system, which are going to allow the complete transmutation of these negative engrams and programmings to the point where we will see what happened. We will understand all of our negativity. It will be shown to us and revealed to us, and we will honestly shift and change from our conscious awareness negativity as this process takes place for on an individual basis.
Can I ask,
eventually it happens to the whole planet.
Now, on December 21st, 2012, a whole bunch of New Age gurus and everything were saying there's going to be some massive explosion in consciousness, and we'll transmute into fifth-dimensional beings, and we'll transcend time and space and become gods or some crap. Did you believe any of that at the time?
Well, actually, that was the reason I came out, because all the people were saying this, and I was just like, that's what I started blogging on Cobra's blog portal, 2012 Blogspot, and he's giving very unique information. His blog opened up on my birthday. I found him within a week, and what made him unique is he started talking about the disarmament of the negative forces and the advanced technologies they were using, and this went hand in hand with the military guy that I met, who was in an underground base, and he was sent to me by the Pleiadians to show me a spaceship. That's an old story, but I didn't believe it, and I wrote, I'm trying to find it actually, it was one of the things that kind of got me, I explained that 2012 is, it's like the sun hitting the surface at sunrise. It's a gradual warming. And there's no way we're going from where we're at now to floating on fluffy fifth dimensional clouds and playing harps. This energy is is a deeply powerful spiritual transforming energy that will reestablish. We'll turn this dungeon into holy space, Vinny. This is sacred holy ground we're on, and we have been tainted. So this is coming, but it's not coming without an understanding, a process, or what I call the plan of redemption, or that takes place through the individual salvation of each individual soul. Yeah. It's a mass thing, and at the same time, Vincenzo, it is a individual responsibility and process of adhering to truth and making changes and decisions with discrimination and choosing for life, love, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the source of all that is good, beautiful, and true.
Can I interject here? Because I was thinking that there's like two types of people that are working on, and I hate that analogy of using those two types of people, because there aren't just two types, there's like a bazillion. But one of the aspects that I was looking at very intensely was the Messiah complex. Oh, something randomly outside of my control is going to happen and save me from all suffering, pain, and everything. And the other is the closer to my perspective, which is reality is defined like Agent Smith says in The Matrix, we define our reality through suffering and pain, and there is no enlightenment without it. And so if you think that somebody's going to come along and save you and you don't have to actually do anything about it, you don't have to endure any pain or suffering in order to accumulate your enlightenment or your freedom, then you don't have enlightenment and you don't have freedom. What you have is a lie, and you're living it.
Now, you say, Agent, he was a little more suffering and lie. That's actually the lie in the program that's been programmed. There is no suffering. This world is an illusion. It's not part of the original creation or the unity consciousness of the divine. So this is actually a fractured half world created by our minds, which is a half step behind. That's why they call it the illusion. So I would say, I agree with you, there's not just, two types of beings, but basically it is a blend of both. There are messianic forces, and the history of us knows that there's no way that humans on Earth like us, who in our current condition with our level of technology, we can't even see onto the astral plane, and yet we have an astral body. There are beings who are implanting crystals in our astral bodies and in our etheric bodies that we have no ability to see. All we can see is our dense physical fleshly shells. We're just starting to woo-woo understand the aura, which is actually the soul, how it anchors. We have various sheaths and various bodies. I did a conference in Mount Shasta just this last month with James Gilliland from the East Seti Ranch, Byron Belitzos, one of the Rancha Book guys, Michael Allegian, Galactic Federation guy, Trisha McCannon, Robert Perala, and myself. And in my thing, I talked a lot about that, and that should be on my website soon. We're going to have an audio and a video of that conference. And next year, Vinny, I'm going to invite you to come for free. We're going to be in the Mount Shasta Mountains there for 5 days. I already have confirmed Omnek, the woman from Venus, has authorized me to provide a conference for her in Mount Shasta, and possibly several other in the States coming up here. But she's was a woman who lived on Venus, spoke a mantra, and became physical, came in a spaceship on a mission to Earth to fulfill some karma here, and she is going to be sharing some information. And what she is saying is that this idea of all this suffering and karma, as we think of it, is really the law of manifestation. So everyone think of it as this and that, equal opposite reaction. You do something good, you do something bad, which is true. As you, as a man, think if you create. If you can imagine yourself, Vinny, you're a source of light. You are a spinning divine vortex, a fractal of the Creator called the living flame or the Word of God in a certain sense. Without getting spiritual or trying to delineate a male or a female or a person, let's just call it this prime creative source. You are a fractal, infinitesimal, holographic speck of that. At the same time, you are the whole thing. So if we look at the soul as an energetic consciousness field expressing itself in time and space, it has light. And light goes from its anode to its cathode. It's like a magnet. There's a pole. The light goes out, electrons, and they reach it. The farthest orbit, and entropy sets in, and they come back down on the negative pole. And if you look at it from someone straight on, Vinny, it looks like a butterfly. If you look at it from the top, it looks like a donut hole. It's a toroid. It's a tornado. It's a vortex. So your thoughts, and this is this what is called, quote, the secret. As you think over time, with emotion combined with your feelings, you draw and manifest unto yourself. And that's what we're all doing. However, this is where the matrix comes in and the implantation of the hostile force, let's call them misguided tyrants, in reptilian bodies. They've set up a field that controls the consciousness field, that only allows either or suffering or that, this belief structure that we've created, that we deserve to have an end time, we deserve to be destroyed. That's all false. We are divine.
Yeah, I don't believe in that stuff either.
we're co-creators of the divine, and we do have a responsibility to control our thoughts and to manifest peace in our lives, demand it from our representatives, and to take back our powers as people. Now, they do control the voting. They have electronic voting in the States. It's all manipulated. They give you the left wing of the CIA or the right wing of the CIA. It doesn't matter. They're all mind-controlled robots. Half the Congress has been mind-controlled. In violation of the Constitution, they're members of the bar, lots of them. And that's, you can't join any foreign association and be a representative in the U.S. government. So when that's enforced, half the Congress is going to shut down, and the truth will be revealed that they all have been taking bribes from and have secret bank accounts in Switzerland, credit cards that no one can trace. It's all in the down low, and they're manipulated by a new world order, which is the financial arm of this takeover group.
And I heard that the CIA and NSA and other various government agencies are actually majority privately owned and funded.
Well, it's they do it through drugs. The CIA has George Bush's oil wells were bringing in heroin back in Kennedy's days from. Now they're bringing off his oil wells. Then they did cocaine the same way, the famous Mena, Arkansas scandal with Clinton and the Whitewater thing with Ken Starr. That was all related to drug running Clinton did for the Bushes, which is, of course, you know, if you look on my website, the Bushes are actually Nazis. George Bush Sr. was the most successful spy of all time, probably.
And his father, Prescott Bush, was actually busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act for supplying Nazi Germany with, like, I don't know, about 40% of their war resources, roughly, give or take, maybe less.
What he did was he was a bag man for money, which there was a lot of guys in the States, the Rockefellers, you know, a lot of people were sympathetic to the Nazis, actually, in the States. But his name was George Scherf, and he came under Hitler's fascination with Nikola Tesla and his technology. So he was studying Tesla. If you look on my website, What's Wrong with America, the Grand Conspiracy, the Truth of the Bush Nazi Crime Family Syndicate, is revealed in a book by Alexander Putney. And I have pictures there of Joseph Mengele, Martin Bormann, Barbara Walker Bush, George Bush Sr., and Reinhard Gehlen in late 30s, early 40s Nazi Germany. So the Bushes were an elite cadre of Nazis. Hitler had a very advanced technology. The good news is all of this is turned around. They're getting the feet knocked out from under them. The white hats in the world's military forces have their number. They're not allowing. They wanted to start war in Iran. Then they tried to go back to Iraq. Then they went to Syria. Then they tried Ukraine. Now they got the ISIS in Syria. That's all funded by the Shamira Group. And this money comes from Yes, child pornography, sex trafficking, lots of drugs. They've been running secret space programs. Spaceships go down and pick up opium in the fields and, you know, they're back. So they have huge drug running operations that have financed these huge things as well.
And gun running operations. Like, there was an article just came out of the yep. Guardian or something like that, that the vast majority of the collected ammunition from ISIS have been like from stolen weapons caches or something from the United States and Britain and other places.
Exactly. So,
and when they say stolen, they mean we sold it to them and shipped it to them and then created a fabrication of plausible deniability behind it in order to CMA, otherwise known as cover my ass.
Right. Well, they plan these things. They everyone knows Cheney and Halliburton, the fracking and the, you know, all that stuff. It's all insider trading. They're very, very, very dark souls. Most of these heavy duty ones will be arrested by the Galactic Federation. They've already jumped down and taken some of the black nobility, some of the highest ranking reptilians in human form, and projected bodies have already been taken. The 10 million of the reptilians lost their lives in battles between 2001 and 2010. There were 10 years of battles in the underground bases to clear out the Nazis and the reptilian and whatever group around the world, whether they're the Mossad, Zionist, Khazarians, or the Congo invasion. You know, it doesn't matter race, creed, or color. Everyone is susceptible. And they have various versions of themselves around the planet that have been trying to instill this and have instilled a very Satanistic prison planet system. The good news is it's a spiritual consciousness, and it runs to the Christ, the Krishna, or the Buddha, whatever religion or lineage of teaching that has, you know, resonated with people. It doesn't matter. Everyone thinks it matters. It's mostly what is determined by the right of vibration and by the fruit of the consciousness that comes from the teachings, which a lot of them have been hijacked by priesthoods. You look at the Catholic religion, the teachings of Christ, the Christians, you know, not that the faithful individuals who study the teachings of these, of the lives of these beings who came to live a message are wrong or false, but much of the information they've been given, the teachings, have been manipulated.
Yeah, it depends whether or not you're looking at the exact source material from which the interpretation is made by somebody and then passed on to you, or whether you're just listening to what they passed on to you and accepting their word for it without looking at any of the original evidence yourself and making a determination based upon your own thoughts and conclusions. Thank you, Robert. Unfortunately, we've run out of time here for the interview. It's been quite exciting and fabulous. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure to be here. If people want to go to my website, thepromiserevealed.com, to check out some of my work with Cobra and the Prepare for Change team. I'm prepareforchange.net. I may be having a conference in Switzerland and Germany in the spring. Look to my website for that. And, of course, the summer conference in Shasta and with Omnic and some other exciting things. But it's been an honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. Just hold on for just a second there while I get out. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want to go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, that's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And you can make a donation or start up a regular monthly subscription or check out our sponsors, Blue Shield, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, and the High Tea Cafe. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Vinnie with a Y, because it is the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And the very special guest I have joining us today is Catherine Albrecht, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, should I say, the creator of startpage.com and the author of Spy Chips. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinny. It's great to be with you and your listeners again.
We've only got a short 25-minute interview with you here today, so I haven't spoken with you for a couple of months. I've just been wondering what the news is these days from your perspective, because in New Zealand we've had this big thing about Edward Snowden and Julian Assange and Kim.com and state surveillance being exposed for the monster that it really is. I was wondering if you'd heard about that, or if there's other news going on in the world in terms of the massive surveillance apparatus that you'd like to share with the audience.
Well, you know, it sure feels like, Vinny, it's expanding almost exponentially. It's like an octopus, and its tentacles are reaching into every aspect of our lives. I think Ed Snowden has done us a massive favor by revealing the extent of really the U.S. Illegal data collection programs, which those of us who are here in the U.S. are very concerned that these data collection programs are directly violating our Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. So I think people worldwide are becoming a little bit distrustful and uneasy about the direction that the U.S. government is taking. But I think a lot of times people neglect to mention what makes all of this possible is the data collection that's occurring on a massive basis through these corporations. So if Google and Microsoft and Yahoo and Facebook and every other company under the sun weren't collecting reams of information about us and storing it on their servers for their own purposes, then the NSA would have to figure out how to collect this information themselves, and that might be a little more challenging. Instead of creating their own data collection programs, they simply access or tap into the vast volumes of information that we are providing, in many cases unwittingly, to these big corporations. So I think the blame, really, the U.S. government is doing what governments will do. They will seek out and overreach and seek out information and power over people to the extent that they're allowed to get away with it. But I think it's really the corporations. I mean, I can't vote the NSA out of office, but I can certainly vote Google out of office, for example, at least out of my own office, by choosing to make a conscious decision not to participate in any kind of software program or app or other thing that these companies offer that's going to be invading my privacy. So I think what I'm really seeing is sort of a low, it's kind of a below-ground rumbling. And we've been working for a couple of years now to create StartMail, which is fully private email, as an alternative to Yahoo and Gmail and Hotmail or Outlook. And after 3 years of development, that's actually going to be launched next month on November 12th. We're officially launching it at the Privacy, Identity, and Innovation Conference in Silicon Valley. So I think what's happening is you're not seeing the kind of riots in the streets that perhaps Ed Snowden was hoping for or some of us had thought might happen, but instead what you're seeing is a kind of a quiet exodus away from these services and these products into a more private direction.
It's kind of like they've changed snail mail into email, and then email became surveil mail, and now everybody's
watched. Yeah. Well, let's talk about email for a minute, because I actually was part of the coalition of privacy organizations and experts who asked Google all the way back 10 years ago in 2004 not to launch Gmail. And few people remember this, but prior to 2004, if anybody had an email account prior to that, you may recall that one of the key parts of the terms and conditions of your account said that they would not read your mail. It was kind of like the Postal Service in our respective countries. They are charged with picking up the mail and delivering it, but certainly not with opening it and scanning it and photocopying it and reading it. I think people would be outraged at that. So in a way, the email programs that came out in the 90s and the early 2000s were really an analog of that. The idea was, we're going to simply be the handler of your messages, but under no circumstances will we ever possibly read them, because that would be a direct violation of your communication privacy. And so those companies back then funded themselves by showing advertisements or by, as you may recall, you'd log on and there would be ads or there might be an ad attached to the bottom of the messages that you sent or received. And also, those accounts were relatively small. I remember in the 90s often writing to somebody and I would get a bounce back saying the person's mailbox is full and they can't accept further messages. So this was kind of a problem through the 90s and the early 2000s that it was private, but because it was free, they really couldn't make these accounts really big. And then Google came along, and I think the best way to understand Google and the immense success of the Google Corporation is once you actually understand that they are not an email provider. I know people are like, what? They're not an email company. They're not a search engine. They're not fill in the blank of whatever you might be using them for. What they really are is a market research firm, and they have been more successful than any market research firm in the history of humanity, because what they hit on is a way to get people to reveal intimate details about themselves, which can then be used for marketing purposes, which they would never volunteer otherwise. See, back in the 1980s, I actually got my undergraduate degree in marketing. And one of the courses that I took, I remember a professor saying, one of the toughest things you'll ever do is market research because people don't want to answer your questions. If you called them up and said, hey, you ever had hemorrhoids? You going through a foreclosure, worried about losing your job or maybe losing your hair? Are you feeling impotent? You having some like rashes? What's up with your marriage? You know, people would go to blank. You know, they just hang up the phone on you. But what Google hit on is that if you provide people with a service and then watch what they do in the service, then you can actually learn more about them than if you hired a whole army of telemarketers to call up and ask market research questions. So by giving everybody on every single computer practically in the world a window where they answer all your questions, they then get to figure out what's going on in your life on the basis of the questions you type in. So when Google made this realization, it shifted from being just a general search engine answering your questions to becoming a hugely powerful multinational corporation that thrives on the information that they're able to capture about us. Now, in 2004, I mentioned up until that point all email was private. In 2004, Google, which at that point was a very large company based on its search engine, came out and said, we want to offer email, and we're gonna one-up you. We're going to actually give you email with a huge storage space, huge storage capacity. I think it was like a gigabyte when they came out. It was like a massive. And they said there's only one catch. Of course, they didn't say this. We had to read the fine print. There was only one catch. Everything that you write in that email, all the emails that you receive and write, will be scanned and Google will begin reading them. Now, this was radically different from anything that had ever happened prior to 2004. So myself, the ACLU, Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, Privacy International, EFF, EPIC, all of the big privacy organizations, we all got together and we issued a joint letter to Google in 2004 saying, don't do it. If you guys launch this thing called Gmail, you're going to create a precedent. You're going to set a precedent that other companies are then going to follow. And if we're not careful, we wrote, all of the other email companies are going to follow suit, and there will be no more privacy in our email. Now, Google just totally disregarded us, did it anyway. People got on board because they wanted the big storage, and they didn't really bother to read the fine print. And the next thing you know, not only did our worst fears come true, because now Yahoo has followed suit. Yahoo reads all your email. Hotmail/Outlook reads all your email. So Microsoft is reading it all too. But not only that, they actually didn't just change email. They changed the entire nature of the Internet to where now virtually every single service you use online is spying on you in exchange for allowing you to use their service. And I'll give you a couple of examples. There's some services out there that will manage your mailing list, for example. And in the process of managing your mailing list, you are handing them an incredibly valuable amount of information about other people, which they fully acknowledge in their terms and conditions that they use, that to figure out who's interested in what, cross-referencing the databases, using this information in all sorts of ways that you never really intended when you let them, quote, manage your data. database and manage your mailing list. So MailChimp is one really good example. You can go on to MailChimp and you can see the company actually has two sides. One of them is the so-called free service, which you can just use to manage your mailing list. But then they've got a whole other side, which is all of the market research insights that they gain from having that kind of sort of in the, you know, right in the middle of things view of all of this personal private data. And that's just one of hundreds or thousands of examples of similar companies that have figured out if you can offer somebody a playground, then you can observe what they do in the playground. And if you, as long as you have your legalese right and you state what you're doing in the terms and conditions, you can get away pretty much with watching anything. And we, the people, really don't even realize that this is happening.
There was a interesting development. Analysis by New Zealand author and journalist Ian Wishart about this. Oh, if I'm not doing anything wrong, nothing will happen to me. And he says that the reason why people still think that is because they're still living in the mail world. Okay, they still think that I can send something through the mail, and there's quite a massive chance that it'll get through without me being busted or something like that, because they think that not everything's absolutely 100% surveilled at all times, so therefore there's a possibility of getting through just in going through with your normal daily business. Whether or not they don't like, the authorities don't like it, it doesn't matter, you'll still get away with the majority of whatever you do. Not the case anymore. They actually read and categorize absolutely everything. You can't get away with anything at all, full stop, unless they don't know what you're doing. And the only way to do that is to hide your activity. And unfortunately, if you hide your activity, according to Snowden and Assange, it makes you a target. And so people's, if it probably won't happen to me mentality is no longer relevant in today's modern surveillance state, is it? It will happen to you.
It's a real problem. I think people view these programs and say, oh, well, they're catching the terrorists, or they're catching the bad guys, or the drug dealers, or whoever. The problem, of course, with this one-size-fits-all blanket surveil everybody mentality is that, well, at least in the U.S., not only is it completely unconstitutional and violates every principle of law in this country, but it also, I think it should inspire outrage, that people should be saying, wait a minute, instead of saying, well, you can see whatever I do, I've got nothing to hide, instead people should be saying, I've done nothing wrong whatsoever, you have absolutely no reason to be spying on me. Do you see the subtle difference? Back in the day that the U.S. Constitution was created, and in fact our rule of law was set up even all the way back in England, the principal concept was, if you're going to investigate or shake somebody down for information, you've got to have a reason to believe that they're guilty of something. You can't just go shaking down everybody. And so in the U.S., we actually have this ensconced in law, because as when we were a colony under the British would just bust into pubs and demand that everybody, empty their pockets, or they would bust into homes and go digging through looking for seditious literature or whatever else they might have been up to. And when we overthrew the British and came up with our own system of government, we said, no more. We don't want to live like that. And unless you can actually prove that there's a crime going on, you can't just go busting in and rifling around people's stuff. And this is exactly the opposite of what's happened on the Internet. I think that the government, of course, the case that they make is, well, hang on, these companies are already collecting all of your personal data. All we're doing is accessing something that you've already surrendered a right to in the first place by allowing them to have a record of it. And I think that that's the argument, even in the back of their minds as they try to justify the kinds of things that they're doing. So, again, I'm going to put the blame right back to the corporations, that the corporations are setting this expectation of privacy invasion, just as Gmail said it all the way back in 2004. And then once that precedent gets set and people get, quote, accustomed to it, or other companies say, well, why should Google have all the action and why should they have all the data? Well, why don't we change our policies too, as Yahoo and Microsoft did? Once all the companies are doing that, then you're going to have a system in which everybody tries to get a piece of the pie, and that's what we're living in now.
I've been seeing a lot of movies lately, Catherine, and one of the recurring themes is that if we don't do it, somebody else will. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, I'm sure rapists have said that before, you know, oh, she's bound to be raped anyway. I'll just rape her myself. Otherwise, somebody else will get in on my action. And that's basically what's going on here, isn't it?
It's a really twisted mentality, and I've even talked to people. Let me just scoot a little bit over to talking about microchip implants, which RFID implants that I've been fighting for 10 years now. Antichips.com is one website about that, and it's really interesting because back in the day when the company, the Verichip Corporation, Applied Digital Solutions, and it's gone by a bunch of names, but back in the day when they were publicly traded on the stock exchange, a lot of people, I would actually read the message boards for their stock, and a lot of people would say, this is the most disgusting product ever. It's horrible. We should be opposing it in the streets. And by the way, I bought 1,000 shares because it's inevitable. If I don't buy it, somebody else is going to buy it, and they're going to make the money. So there's kind of a mindset, and I think it's really almost a social ill that we've fallen into this mindset that because somebody else is going to do something wrong, that we may as well do something wrong ourselves. And that's a really twisted mentality, because the reality at the end of the day, you don't have to answer for the somebody else. You don't have to answer for the state of society, but you are going to have to stand up and answer for your own actions. And there's going to be no opportunity to say, oh, well, I only did it because if I didn't, somebody else will do it. The judge of the universe is going to look you in the eye and say, no, I don't care what somebody else did. What did you do? And if what you did was repulsive and disgusting, you're going to have to answer for that. I don't care if everybody else is doing it. I don't care if it's a universal. You're still going to have to answer for your own actions. And that certainly holds for all of these companies that are developing new products and finding ever increasingly sophisticated and sneaky ways to grab people's data. They're ultimately morally responsible for their own decisions there.
Now, I was just thinking about this last night, actually, about karma and how everybody gets what they deserve. And to me, that's absolute BS, because if that was the case, there'd be no such thing as unsolved murders, right?
Well, I'm a Christian, and I believe that all of that comes back at some future point. We've heard from a lot of people who have, quote, died, right, in operating rooms and surgeries and hospitals and accidents. And a really common theme that a lot of them report is their entire life racing before their eyes, you know, sort of the recap of your life. And I think they've had just a little bit of a taste of what it probably is like as we approach the throne of judgment, and we have to answer for every idle word that we've spoken, every crime that we've committed for which we have not been forgiven. And I do believe that, you know, when you make these kind of crafty decisions, then you are going to have to pay for that at some point, if only when the veil is lifted and you see the horribleness of what you yourself have done. That's got to be a pretty bad feeling.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, the Rockefellers and the Rothschild families and all of these other people are probably, you know, killing, raping, destroying, deceiving and stealing and what have you on a scale not ever seen before in the history of Earth, maybe even the galaxy. And I don't see them suffering any consequences of any kind whatsoever.
Well, you know, if I speak about the Bible, there's a passage in the Bible that I've actually referred to in my heart many times, and it says, the Lord knows how to save the ungodly to the point of judgment, essentially. So what it means, preserving the ungodly to the point of judgment, they're cruising along in this life, but their retirement plan looks really awful. I'll put it that way. And I'm not sure how people who don't believe in any kind of justice in a spiritual sense or any kind of afterlife would manage to process that, but I absolutely believe that people are responsible for their actions and they have to answer for them and that they are punished for them. So I have to say that makes it a little bit easier for me.
Well, sure, it might be. I mean, I look at, for example, in New Zealand, we have a very corrupt politician called John Banks who took a $50,000 donation from internet mogul Kim.com, and he asked them to split it into two checks, because if you donate more than $25,000 per donation, you have to declare who it comes from. So he specifically had a meeting with him in order to do this, and this is illegal under electoral law, so he was under electoral fraud. The police wouldn't prosecute him, the Crown prosecutors wouldn't prosecute him, and it actually took a private prosecution by a guy named Graham McCready, who advocates for people who've been screwed over by the system and what have you for the most part, to actually take personal responsibility, as well as the help of a number of activists in New Zealand, including Penny Bright and Russell Malcolm, to actually do the work that was necessary in order to bring this man to justice. And this is what I think is actually even more important than a spiritual awareness of cosmic justice and the divine will, etc., is that you can actually inflict and bring justice to the guilty and to the corrupt by taking personal responsibility for making it happen.
Amen. And I think we need to be doing more of it. I'm certainly not implying that we should all just sit back and turn the other cheek and allow any old abuses to happen. I think that there's, I mean, if you look at my own record, I've held protest signs outside of Walmart stores and picket signs and organized all kinds of opposition. In fact, the reason that the Verichip Corporation that makes those implantable microchips, the reason they're not currently traded on the stock exchange is because I worked with the Associated Press reporter, Todd Lewin, to reveal the fact that the FDA had approved that implantable microchip without reviewing studies showing that it was causing cancer in laboratory animals and even in dogs. And when that story broke, which I worked tirelessly for about 6 months to put together a report and all the research on that, which you can find at chipmenot.com, when that report broke, that company went from trading at about $11 a share to trading at 30 cents a share. They were delisted from the stock exchange. They became a penny stock, and they absolutely lost all of the market that they had. In fact, people who had been implanted with those devices quietly got those devices removed by the company. So I'm certainly no stranger to getting in the trenches and fighting back against these kinds of terrible programs and injustices. I definitely believe that there's a place for individual action. But there are some things over which we really don't have that kind of control. And you exercise control where you can and where you cannot, where I don't have power directly over the Rockefellers, but I certainly know in my heart of hearts that they will get theirs when the time comes. I have no question about it. And to me, that's a reassuring thing. So where I can have an impact now, I will. And where I can't, I know that justice is going to be meted out someday.
See, to me, it's more like I've become very jaded and cynical, like a real journalist. And the thing that I've been realizing lately is it doesn't matter whether or not I win when I fight against evil. What matters is whether or not I choose to fight it at all. It's a moral obligation that compels me to do the right thing in and of itself, and it needs no further justification than that.
Absolutely, and that's what I was talking about. When you look in the mirror at the end of the day, all you can answer for is your own actions. Did you participate in the evil and make it worse with some vague justification of, oh, well, if I don't do it, somebody else will, or everybody else is doing it, or did you stand your ground, and did you stand for what was right, even if you weren't successful? And I think morally what we're judged for at the end of the day is not our aim, but what direction we were aiming. So I kind of picture us all having targets, and we're all here with our bow and arrow, and some of our aim is right on, and we hit the point, and we hit the mark. Other times the wind blows, or something happens, or we slip, and it goes wildly off the mark. But I'll tell you, those of us who were aiming at justice and freedom and liberty and goodness and truth and honesty and health and all those other things are aiming in the right direction, and we get credit for that. Other people are aiming specifically in the wrong direction, and whether they hit or miss their mark, they've got to answer, I believe, for those poor aims. So I'm with you completely. I think that what really counts, what are you trying to accomplish in the world? And every once in a while, we get lucky. We actually accomplish it. Every once in a while, we fail miserably and do not accomplish it. But once again, I do believe that we at the end of the day, are judged on what our intentions were and how hard we tried.
I really hate the people who are just like, oh, but you're focusing on that, and it's not as important as this thing over here that you should be focusing on. It's like, bro, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Thank you, Catherine.
You know, I've got it.
Oh, yes.
Can I?
Sure, go.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to answer that. On my very original website at nocards.org years ago, I once wrote an essay there. You can actually find it. It's about, with all the pain and suffering in the world, why are you focused on frequent shopper cards? That's how I got started as an activist. And I answered that actually with a true story. I was once listening to National Public Radio, and they had a story about a woman who was rescuing dogs and cats and horses from the streets of Calcutta, India. And my first thought was not, good for her. My first thought was, what are you talking about, dogs and cats? There's children dying in the streets of Calcutta. Why are you focused on dogs and cats when you should be focused on children? And it was only later that it hit me with some degree of actually ashamedness that rather than thanking this woman for doing anything at all, right, because there's millions of people who do nothing for children or animals or anybody else for that matter, I instead was blaming her for not being good enough. So instead of saying, good, you're doing something good, I was like, well, it's not good enough. How often do we find ourselves in that position where someone who's doing good is not doing good in the way we think they ought to be doing, and we judge them, whereas there are millions of people who are doing nothing at all or actively doing harm, and those people rarely receive that kind of judgment. So I would say, Vinny, if you're out there fighting anything that is in the direction of justice and right, that other people need to lay off and say thank you for focusing on that, because that frees them up to focus on their own issue, knowing that you've got the other one covered.
If somebody's doing the right thing, don't try and stop them. You know, get the get the frickin' heck out of the way, yo. All right, Catherine Albrecht has been my very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back just after the break. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com if you want to support the broadcast, and either check out our sponsors, Blue Shield, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, or the High Tea Cafe. And if you want to support this broadcast specifically with your donations, there are PayPal buttons and a New Zealand bank account number on the homepage there as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining me now is Penny Bright, otherwise known as Her Worship. Now, a lot of people don't think that goes down very well with people, but I disagree. Worships generally go down with a lot of people. Penny, welcome to the program.
Cheers, Vinnie. Yep.
You've gone through a little bit of a hell, as usual, so please regale the... I've seen the news story, Penny, about them trying to sell your house out from under you for not paying your rates, even though you've disputed and properly not paid them because of a very specific reason. They ain't telling you where any of the council money is going, and so therefore you're entitled to withhold money from people who don't tell you what the heck they're doing with it. I mean, I thought that was pretty straightforward, and yet that very simple few seconds that I've just explained that exact instance here didn't seem to come out in the news story, which went on for over a minute.
Well, yes, I mean, it's not complicated. If you don't know your rights, you haven't got any. And citizens and ratepayers are entitled to open, transparent and democratically accountable local government. And under the Public Records Act 2005, Section 17, we're entitled to full and accurate records to be created and maintained, including those with private sector contracts. And my beef was that there's basically, especially with Auckland Council now, billions of dollars going to private sector consultants and contractors. And what I want to see is the names of these consultants and contractors, the scope, the term, and the value of these contracts, and that be information being made available for public scrutiny. Anyway, despite my best efforts, that basically we're not being given, that information in a proper way. And so my simple argument is, well, if you're not going to tell me where my rates are going, I'm not giving you any. That's it. I call it the 2-year-old tactic. Nah.
And has this been working for you? I mean, how much do you owe? I heard in the region of $30,000.
Well, the reality is I have refused to pay rates since 2008. And so that's well, that's over 6 years worth. But in actual fact, the $33,000, actually the majority of that is like legal fees and penalties, because there's no way that on average I'm paying $5,000 a year in rates. So what's happening is that basically Auckland Council are trying to neck stamp me as an anti-corruption whistleblower and trying to make an example out of me. But what's happened is that the tide is turning. Legally, the High Court proceedings to sell my house have come to a shuddering halt. And the reason for that is that the legal paperwork that went into the district court calling for an application to have the judgment set aside, and this is the judgment debt upon which they're relying in the High Court to sell my house, on the basis that that judgment debt, that was a decision made on the 24th of February 2012. I didn't know anything about the hearing. I wasn't there. The judgment wasn't made by a judge. It was made by a deputy registrar. And based on legal arguments put forward by someone from Auckland Council who wasn't a lawyer. So for a number of reasons, it's all pretty dodgy. And so, so the application with a supporting affidavit has gone in, along with an application for proceedings to be stayed. So what made my day yesterday was getting an email from the Auckland Council senior solicitor to the district court saying that because of these applications that I put in, that Auckland Council were wanting both the hearings to be heard together, which I have no problem with, but stating Auckland Council would be opposing these applications. So the story is this, when I hear back from the district court as to the date of a hearing, and I, goodness knows when that will be, but when there is a hearing date set, I'm calling for all those people that support what I do to come to court and want that courtroom packed inside and outside, because I mean, it's a pretty extraordinary stand for an ordinary person to make, to actually have your house on the line when all you're trying to do is to make sure you're getting your lawful entitlement to the transparency that we're supposed to be lawfully entitled to in the first place.
Well, what we're entitled to and what we have are two incredibly different things. And the difficulty is most people believe that government and agencies that work for it have altruistic agendas for everything.
Well, that's obviously garbage. But what's fascinating is that the research I did, when you actually go back and you, with the benefit of hindsight, and you look at the timelines, what happened was that Auckland Council CEO, I've had two CEOs of Auckland Council who I believe have absolutely had it in for me, and who have personally, vindictively and maliciously picked on me. So first one being former Auckland Council CEO Doug Mackay, who was the CEO of Auckland Council at the time that we had Occupy Auckland from the 15th of October 2011. I was very involved in the Occupy Auckland movement at that time. I also stood in the 2011 general election against John Banks in Epsom. And what happened was that the Auckland Council chose to attack me on two fronts over two separate issues. One was Occupy Auckland, and the other was my rates case. Back on the 3rd of November 2011, which was the date that I successfully got my one and only press release that mainstream media picked up, published, which was, where is National's review of corporate welfare and just saying, well, how many billions could be saved by cutting out the contractors? That same day, the 3rd of November, is when Auckland Council launched the case against me over my rates. And what happened was they put in their notice of claim, I put in my defendant's response, and made it very clear that I was challenging this. And anyway, cut long story short, when all hell broke loose with Occupy Auckland, on the first working day after the election, I think it was about the 28th of November, what happened was Auckland Council singled me and one other person out of all the hundreds of Occupy Auckland protesters. We were individually named. The other person didn't defend the proceedings, but I did. So what happened was that when we eventually got evicted from Aotea Square on the 26th of January, what happened was I had a pack, and inside my pack was a folder, and inside my folder were papers relating to my rates case. And what happened was Auckland Council confiscated all that property. I never got it back. So when there was the hearing of my rates case on the 24th of February 2012, I had no idea that a hearing was even taking place. So I knew nothing about it. And anyway, and I was up to my eyeballs in Occupy Auckland stuff, because when we, a number of us, went back and camped at Aotea Square in breach of the injunction, eight of us were selected to face an order of committal for contempt of court. We faced jail for putting our tents back. Eight of us were named, and I was prepared to go to jail. I thought, stuff you, no way, this is not okay. So anyway, what happened was the council ended up backing off the order of committal for contempt of court, but I was a named defendant, then named respondent, ended up being one of the two appellants who were successful in getting that injunction quashed. So you can beat City Hall. We did it over Occupy Auckland, and I look forward to the same thing happening with the application to set aside the judgment in this rates case as well. I mean, back in the bad old days of Auckland City Council, you remember, Vinny, I was arrested 22 times by Auckland City Council. They triggered my arrest, and although not all cases went to court, it ended up being 21-1 to me.
What my concern is, Penny, that they don't follow their own rules anyway, and even if you do beat them in court, they'll just say, yeah, nah, it will just take your house anyway, like send in the yellow-jacketed thugs to kick you out of your home, which you bought and paid for yourself.
Nah, they won't be doing that. At the end of the day, to use a John Key.
I don't know. I mean, have a look at what happened to Nikki Hager and what's happened to me with my YouTube channel being deleted. I think the government's now taking an active role in basically destroying those who resist now. I think they've actually just got the mandate from the people. Yep, less than half of the population even turned out to vote, and about half of those voted for us. So that gives us a mandate to actively suppress anybody who dissents against us now. And that's basically what it says to me.
Well, good luck with that. There's no frigging way they're going to be selling my house, and there's no way I'll be moving from my house. And I am actually very comfortable and relaxed about the fact that this is going to end up with Auckland Council, particularly the CEO, who is the one who triggered these proceedings, Auckland Council CEO Stephen Town. He is the one who's going to be in really big trouble. And the reason for that is that Auckland Council last year, behind closed doors, without the public having a clue, on the 6th of March, they came up with this policy for how to enforce racing sales on freehold properties, which has not been done before. You see, I'm freehold. That's the problem that they have, and this a lot of people know. I mean, I choose to work full-time, self-funded, in the public interest, and I'm able to do that because I have a freehold property, and it's in flatmate income that I survive on. I don't get a benefit or anything, which puts me in a bit of an unusual situation. Anyway, So what happened last year, they passed this policy, and the only person that can trigger a rating sale is the CEO, Stephen Town. All right? So what happened was, again, I believe that I'm being victimised vindictively and maliciously by Auckland Council CEO, Stephen Town, because on the 20th of February this year, at the CEO Review Committee of Auckland Council, I applied for speaking rights. And the reason why I applied for speaking rights is I wanted to raise directly with the committee that's concerned with the CEO my concern that Stephen Town was a member of this shadowy, unelected private business lobby group, the Committee for Auckland. Now, Chair Chris Fletcher, she declined me speaking rights, and unfortunately for them, I have the paper trail from her executive assistant that says, worse to the effect, that Chair Chris Fletcher has received an assurance from CEO Stephen Towne that he's not a member of the Committee for Auckland. And I said, well, he's lying, because I've got two pieces of evidence here that prove that he is. And I said, I will be coming to the meeting. I intend to speak. And so, situation normal, I roll up to the town hall, go to this CEO review committee meeting. Christine Fletcher still, you know, won't let me speak, so I stand up on my hind legs and do a penny bite and speak anyway. And what happens is that she instructs two council officers to physically remove me. So I'm censored and I'm assaulted. So what happened is, I go to the Auckland Central Police and lay a complaint for assault against these council officers, and Christine Fletcher for being a party to the assault, and in their customary way, the police do nothing. But what happened then, I went to an internet cafe, printed off on that exact day, 20th of February 2014, the list, membership list of the Committee for Auckland, and there was Stephen Towne, CEO, Auckland Council. So, yeah. So I know that Stephen Towne tells lies, because he told lies then. Well, then he rather stupidly put out a press release on Friday when there was a lot of mainstream media coverage of what happened, what's happening with me and my house. And you know, it wasn't all bad. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, quite useful and quite positive, but sure as hell a lot of people now know about it. And so about 2:30, Friday afternoon, Stephen Towne puts out this press release where he makes a very foolish statement Ms. Bright is making wild, or has made wild and inaccurate allegations. Well, I don't do wild and inaccurate. In fact, I have put...
Well, actually, Penny, I disagree. You do wild accusations, but they're nonetheless accurate.
Well, I prefer hard-hitting, factual... factual explanations of what's actually happening. But, I mean, I've put a huge amount of time and effort into doing my homework and getting my facts straight. And
by chance, has this guy that you're talking about ever won a Good Citizenship Award?
Well, that's something which, of course, has had a bit of further publicity. I mean, I got a Good Citizens Award at a time I wasn't paying rates. The Good Citizens Award was dated the 29th of June 2010, by the Eden Albert Community Board in recognition of your outstanding service to the community. And part of the reason why I got this rather controversial award at the time was because of the work that I was doing trying to get transparency in contracting. And so 4 years later, the Auckland Council CEO is trying to force the sale of my house for exactly the same reason. Go figure. Anyway, so, yeah. So in terms of Stephen Towne putting out this press release, well, it got picked up on Scoop. His comments were published in full on Stuff. There was a screenshot of the words Ms. Bright has made these wild and inaccurate allegations. That was on TV1 News. And so under Section 25 of the Defamation Act, you have 5 working days to put in a claim for the retraction of such comments, but there's also provision for financial compensation. And I don't know how you can put money on a good name, because I believe I've got a very good name. But, I mean, this person, Stephen Towne, he gets about $630,000 a year, and I do what I do on less than $20,000 a year. However, doesn't matter how many millions or squillions you have, you cannot buy or sell a reputation. It's based on people's accumulated experience of your actions, and, I mean, And in my view, a good reputation is priceless. So it is my intention to put in an open list to Stephen Towne demanding a formal retraction, and I'll also discuss with a few more people over the monetary sum that I want compensation for. But yeah, I've never, ever gone for gold, ever. For all those times I got dragged out of the town hall, blah, 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 and was, you know, I've never gone for money, I haven't. But on this occasion, if that's the thing that makes them sit up and pay attention, well, that is what I'm going to do. So anyway, I need to work on that one. But the other thing too is looking at either the next meeting of the CEO Review Committee or calling for Chris Fletcher to convene an urgent meeting, because as far as I'm concerned, in my considered opinion, this the current CEO of Auckland Council is absolutely out of control. And I can tell you now, there will have be elected councillors who will have seen that press release and gone, oh my God, because whether they like me or loathe me, all of them, any of them, would be very hard-pressed to say that that penny doesn't get a fact straight. They know I do my homework. So, you know, inaccurate is the word I take the strongest exception to.
Well, when you have no truth to back your case, the only thing you really have is appeal to emotion and appeal to some kind of fallacy in order to degrade somebody else in the eyes of the public. And about 30% of the public are so mindless that they will believe anything they read without demanding to see a single shred of evidence to back up the claim.
Well, that's the thing. When he made his wild and inaccurate allegation about me, he didn't provide one skerrick of evidence to back that up. And I'm sorry, but under Section 42 of the Local Government Act, that's the legislation that covers the role of the CEO, it sure as hell doesn't give him the lawful right to defame the good name of a community volunteer who works full-time, self-funded in the public interest and pays a lot of attention, considerable attention, to getting effects dead straight.
Now,
so
speaking of which,
the wrong girl. Yep.
Is it not the media's job to also fact-check things before reporting on them? And what justification do they have reporting what he said without fact-checking it to see whether or not it was true?
Well, that comes into it as well, but I'm looking forward to getting, coverage over my taking, the first step in the defamation proceedings against Stephen Towne.
But consider this, Penny, consider this an extended mayoral campaign.
Hello?
Yeah?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I do stand for public office usually to, you know, make a fuss about the issues, but when the CEO, principal administrative officer for Auckland Council, makes such a filthy defamatory statement and it's published far and wide, well then, you know, that is absolutely unacceptable. And anyway, I will be doing more work on that one. But if people are interested in helping, somebody has set up a site, give a little site. I mean, what would be good is, I don't have 32,000 sitting there to pay them, and there's no way they're going to get a cent out of me until they give the information that we're lawfully entitled to. But by the same token, it is quite handy to have money sitting there in escrow, you know, just sitting there to say, well, you know, money's there, but you're not getting a cent until you act lawfully and tell us where our rates are going. Because, I mean, I started off this by focusing on council spending consultants and contractors, but what I've subsequently found out quite recently is that Auckland Council is in debt to the tune of $5.5 billion. But again, we're not being given the devilish details of to whom are we in debt and for what. And then I found out that Auckland Council is exposed to derivatives to the tune of $5.8 billion. Well, you know, and again, exactly who have got those derivative contracts? I mean, are any of them, exposed to derivatives via the Bank of America, which, of course, we know that John Key is still a shareholder in. So at the highest levels, we've got billions of dollars floating around. We don't know where it's going. And yet they come down, all this micromanagement of the poor, and they want to slice and dice here on things that affect the little people, piddling amounts. Yet you've got this total lack of transparency and accountability at the highest levels. Well, that might work for some people, but it does not work for me. That is not okay.
Can you actually see a positive change happening in the general council way of going about things? And what about all the other people that haven't paid their rates, Penny? I mean, I doubt that they have your acumen when it comes to defending themselves in court, and I see a whole lot of people either capitulating or losing their homes.
Well, I'm the first off the block in terms of this legal, this unprecedented and historic attempt for a forced rating sale of a freehold property, which is also part of the reason why it is so important to fight back. But I mean, you know, fight back is what I do. And turning a bad thing into a good thing, if you remember the it's actually similar in a number of ways to the famous Ike Fennell science case. And all these people that say, oh, you know, you've sort of got to have a cast of thousands, you don't actually. It's the depth of the stand, not the breadth of the stand. I mean, you know, with Ike, he was prepared to go to jail over his science case. And what happened was, thanks to Ike digging his toes in, we got this important change to the Local Government Act. Well, it was a bill going through Parliament there under Section 1553. It was ruled that council bylaws could not be inconsistent with the Bill of Rights Act. And that was a major victory, and that was one person who dug his toes in. And that Ike Fennell science case was really pivotal in the Occupy Auckland case. And because I'd been one of three people very involved in that, I mean, I knew my stuff. And, yeah, so that also helped us get a positive outcome with the Occupy Auckland appeal. So that's it, you know. It's, yeah, you don't have to have a cast of thousands to make a difference, but those of us who have got our neck way up above the parapets, it's nice to know that there is public support. So, so for those who want to help, I mean, like I say, there's that Give a Little sites there where you can help put some money in. And, so it can be sitting there. There's no way I'm paying anything till we know where the money's going. Be rest assured of that one. But it makes it a lot harder on the council to try and next stamp. There's still ongoing money issues in terms of the election campaign. Yeah, still owe money for my hoardings. And I'm the only candidate that I know anywhere in the country that had the word "stop corruption" on my signage. And
might have something to do with all the rest of the candidates being corrupt. But I'm sorry, Penny, we've run out of time.
No worries. No, thanks for the opportunity, Vinny. But it is all go. And sometimes your worst enemy is your best friend.
Yeah, especially when, what was it? There's an old saying, how do you expose a fascist? By making them act like it. Thank you, Penny. Good on you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Nobody said.